Well, we were finishing up 1 Samuel chapter 25 on Wednesday evening, and that was a most interesting story about, of course, David is on the run from Saul. Saul is chasing after him. Now, is this because David is a bad fellow? Is he? Why is he a fugitive here from Saul? Because the Spirit of the Lord has departed from Saul because of his unfaithfulness, and the Spirit of the Lord had come upon David, and it became fairly apparent, quite apparent to Saul there, that something had changed in his life. Of course, Samuel had told him it would, and he begins to be, you know, this evil spirit that has come upon him to take the place of the Spirit of God that had been upon Saul. He begins to be suspicious of those around him, and here is a rising young star, David, and the women are singing about David's military success. Saul has slain his thousands, David has slain his 10,000s, and so jealousy becomes a part of Saul's life. And so he realizes fairly quickly that the rising star among the people of Israel at this time is David, and the people love him, they sing of him, and so it's not long before David is the object of Saul's jealousy, his wrath, and David is having to run for his life, even though David remains faithful to Saul. And we talked about how there was an opportunity where David was having to run from Saul, and David and his men were hiding in a cave, and Saul comes into the cave, and David's able to come up behind him and even snip off part of his garment. And what could David have done to Saul? Killed him, right, but he didn't kill him. This is God's anointed we're talking about. You know, Saul is the king of Israel. He was anointed by God to be, through Samuel, to be the king of Israel. You know, David doesn't feel like he can harm him. You know, David realizes, you know, what's going on with Saul, because David, as a younger man, had been the one that would pluck the strings of the harp to try to calm Saul's nerves. And so he's had opportunity to kill Saul, but he's not doing that. But anyway, he's on the run, but he has to run for his life to preserve his life. And we saw the interesting situation where he comes to the house of Nabal, a very rich man, and asks for some provisions. And Nabal insults David to his men, and insults David to the point that David, he really took this, you know, personally. He's going to go and wreak destruction, havoc on the house of Nabal. And Nabal's very wise and intelligent wife, Abigail, puts together some provisions and rushes out because she knows that David and his men are on the way to destroy their household. And, what does Nabal mean? Who remembers? Fool, yeah. And so Nabal has acted very foolish. David's going to go in and destroy him and his household. But Abigail, Nabal's wife, realizes the foolishness of her husband. She's had to live with him for quite a few years. Our wives know us quite well, don't they? And so she gets these provisions and goes out and meets David and his men as they're coming to destroy them. And sends servants along with her. And so she's got all of these provisions for David's men. And she says, you know, David, you know, you don't do something rash and foolish that you'll regret later. You know, you go in and do something that you'll regret later. You know, even innocent people could be killed. And he realizes what a smart and intelligent lady this is, and helps calm him down. And he realizes that he was being impetuous here. And so he turns and goes back. And so she goes back to her home, and everything is okay. And she gets back to her house and finds that her husband has held a great feast and has become inebriated. And she wants to tell him what she has just, you know, avoided, the bad situation that was about to befall them. And if you think about it here, Nabal having a great feast and and drunk. And if David and his men had gotten there, it would have been easy pickings, wouldn't it have been, for David and his men to just wipe out the house of Nabal. Well, Abigail gets back and finds her husband in the state. Of course, she probably realized, his heart's merry, it says, but she probably knows when and when not to talk to a man named Nabal, that means fool. So she waits until the next day and tells him, you know, how she was able to go in and stop this from happening. And it said that his heart became like stone. I'm guessing he had somewhat of a stroke. He didn't realize how close it had been to, you know, destruction of his household. And he was ill for several days, and then the Lord struck him, and he died 10 days later. And so when Nabal was dead, David heard about it, and he sends for Abigail. He was very impressed with Nabal's wife here and her intelligence as well as her beauty. And so he sends for Abigail when he finds out that Nabal is dead, sends his men to get her to become his wife. And she doesn't hesitate. She gets right on and goes off with him, and she becomes David's wife. Remember in Gone with the Wind, I think it was Scarlett's second husband, Mr. Kennedy, he died, and it had the funeral, and Rhett Butler comes calling, and he even gets a piece of the rose that had been on Mr. Kennedy's coffin, and Scarlett marries him that day. Well, that's not quite the same situation. I don't think Abigail is anything like that, but made me think about it. She didn't stick around to mourn for her husband, did she? She got up and she took off with David. She knew she had a good man in David. And so she goes and joins up with David. And he has another wife also, Ahinoam of Jezreel. He has two wives here with him. But he had also had, you remember who his first wife had been? Michal, or as Bob says, McCall. I can't say it quite like that. But Saul had given her to another man when David fled, had to flee for his life, and left McCall or Michal behind. Saul had given her to another man. And so David is here on the run with two wives. Such an interesting story about Abigail and how she saved the house of Nabal, and saved David, actually, because David was about to do something very rash that he would have regretted later. So that's where we wrapped up Wednesday night. And going into chapter 26, I touched on the fact that David had been on the run from Saul, and I mentioned how David had been in the deep recesses of a cave when Saul came into the cave and was resting there. And David comes up and snips off part of his garment and then confronts Saul with it as Saul goes to leave. It began to wear on David's conscience what he had done. And so he goes to the mouth of the cave and says, "Saul, look what I have here, a piece of Saul's garment." And Saul realized very quickly that he had been unfair toward David, that David wasn't out to kill him. David wasn't out to overthrow him. That wasn't David's nature. And we see kind of a brief reconciliation between the two men, but David knows not to go back with Saul, even though Saul invites him to go back and be in his former place in Saul's household. David knows, no, that's not going to be a good idea, because he knows what is happening to Saul during this time, how he's being terrorized by the evil spirits and the jealousy that Saul has. So you remember that story. We come to another story here in chapter 26. David is once again having to run for his life because, you know, after that brief reconciliation, sure enough, after a while, Saul begins to want to pursue David again, wants to go in and kill David. You know, he feels threatened by him. And the Ziphites come to Saul. Saul is Gibeah, which is his hometown, which is his capital during his kingdom. It's not Jerusalem at this point. It's Gibeah, Saul's town. In fact, Jerusalem is not under the control of Israel at this time. It's held by other people. So the Ziphites they decide they're going to make friends with Saul, and they come to Saul and say, "We can take you to David. He's hiding in the hills, the hill of Hakilah, out toward Jeshimon. You know, we can tell you where he is." So they go and tell Saul how he can find David. So Saul appreciates this, and he gets his men together, 3,000 chosen men of Israel, to go searching for David in the wilderness of Ziph. So here we have Saul and his 3,000 men out searching for one man who's not really an enemy of the state, is he? What a great use for his 3,000 men to go on this wild goose chase, chasing after a man that's not even a threat to him. Saul goes there where the Ziphites had told him that David would be, and says that David was in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul was coming after him. And David had spies. David had people watching Saul, and so they knew what Saul was up to, and so these spies come back and tell David that Saul is on his way. And so David is able to be on the lookout for Saul coming to get him. So it says David was keeping track of him, and in verse 5 tells us that Saul and his 3,000 men were camped and there where the Ziphites had told them to go. And David went and spied out the place where Saul was camped. David saw even where Saul was lying down to sleep at night. David knew where that was. And where Abner, Saul's commander, where he was lying down to sleep, there to protect Saul. And Saul was in the very middle of the camp, the circle of the camp, the safest place to be in the camp. Saul was definitely, he was the king, so he was the one that had to be protected by these 3,000 men. And so he's sleeping in the very middle of the camp where all of the soldiers are camped around him. And Abner's right there, his commander is right there by him. And so he seems to be, Saul seems to be in a very safe place. And so David's intelligence, his spies, and he can see this for himself, how the camp is laid out, and it's night, and he says to two of his men, Ahimelech and to Abishai, he says, "Who wants to go with me down to the camp of Saul?" Well, Abishai, now this is Joab's brother, and we're going to hear a lot more about Joab and later. This will be, Joab is David's commander, but Abishai is his brother, and Abishai says, "I'll go with you. I'll go with you. We can sneak down there in the cover of darkness to Saul's camp." That's what David wanted to do. So Abishai was brave, and he says, "I'll go down with you." So David and Abishai sneak down into the camp of the Israelites here under cover of darkness, and they are able to penetrate all the way to the center of the camp, where Saul and Abner are sleeping. The safest place in the camp, they're able to get right there. And it tells us, we'll just go ahead and skip down to the end of verse 12 right now, it tells us that they were able to do this because God was on their side. A sound sleep from the Lord had fallen over the camp. So the Lord allowed the soldiers to fall into a deep sleep so that David and Abishai were able to sneak into the tent. The very heart, or the camp, even the very heart of the camp, the most secure place. And they get down there and see Saul sleeping in the middle of the camp. And his spear is stuck in the ground right there where he had to wake up in the middle of the night suddenly. If they were being invaded, he could just jump up and grab his spear out of the ground and he'd be ready to fight. And you can kind of imagine that soldiers, when they're camping, they usually probably sleep rather lightly because they're concerned about things like this happening, but the sound sleep had been provided by the Lord. So David and Abishai are there, and they go up and see Saul sleeping there, and his spear stuck in the ground, and his canteen or water bottle that's there also. And so they're seeing, Abner, his commander sleeping right there too. His Abner, his commander, his bodyguard right there asleep. They're right there. And, you know, so, wow, what an opportunity that's there for David. You know, here this man has been pursuing him all this time, and he's lying there asleep and defenseless. And Abishai says, oh, come on, let's kill him. Let's kill him. Let me do it. I can do it in one blow. Just one, you know, one strike, he'll be dead. That's all it'll take. Abishai is all ready to go in and help David take out Saul. And Abishai is thinking of Saul as their enemy. And just one stroke, we won't need to do it a second time. I'll do it the first time. But David, being the faithful man that he is, as we've seen him in the past, remember the situation in the cave when he could have killed Saul in the cave? He said, same situation again. Saul is in his control. He can do whatever he wants to. But what's David's attitude? He says to Abishai, do not destroy him. Who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be without guilt? I can't do this to our King Saul. He's the Lord's anointed. He was anointed to be king over Israel. I couldn't spread out my hand against him. And David, you see the righteous aspect of David here again. And, you know, if I did that, I would be guilty. And, of course, you know, would that be a fair fight either? You know, if Saul's, you know, laying there asleep on the ground and a deep slumber. But David's not going to do that anyway. He says, I can't do that. And surely, as the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him. On the day that comes when he dies or if he's in battle and perishes, David says, let's let the Lord take care of this. God knows when will be the right time to strike him. When Saul's time comes, let that be the Lord's decision, not us. You know, we're not going to strike the Lord's anointed. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed, but let's take his spear and his water bottle instead. So David takes his spear and the water bottle, and he and Abishai leave the camp and go back to where they had been hiding. And took the spear and the jug of water beside Saul's head, and no one saw it or knew it. No one awoke. No one was awakened during all this because of that deep slumber that the Lord had sent upon Saul's camp. So David crosses over to the other side and stands on top of a mountain there, and there's quite a distance between them, a valley, I guess, separating them. He's up on top of a mountain. And David begins to call down to Saul's camp there, the camp of the Israelites, this camp of 3,000 men. You know, here's David and up here by himself with Abishai, and you know he's got about, I think, about 300 men. Maybe he's up to 600 men at this point. And he begins to, you know, call, you know, here in the middle of the night to Abner. He says, Abner, will you not answer me? And he's calling to Saul's commander. And so Abner wakes up and says, who are you to be calling to the king? So they're having this calling match back and forth here in the middle of the night from the valley up to the top of the mountain. And David says to Abner, are you not a man? And who is like you in Israel? You're the most mighty man in Israel. You're Saul's commander, the commander of his army. Why then haven't you been taking good care of your king? Why haven't you been guarding him like you should? One of the people came to destroy the king, your lord, and you were asleep. You did not protect him. The thing that you have done, Abner, is not good. You let your guard down. You were not being the security to the king that you should have been. As the Lord lives, you've been falling down on the job. You have to die for this. You know, if you're asleep on the job, you die. As the Lord lives, all of you must surely die because you did not guard your Lord, the Lord's anointed, speaking of Saul the king. See where the king's spear is and where his jug of water is that was by his head. David says, where's Saul's spear? Where's Saul's bottle of water? You can just about imagine here in the darkness, and what? What? And they start looking around. And guess what's missing there by Saul? His spear, his water bottle. Here's a man up on the mountain calling down to them saying, you've been asleep on the job. Somebody came into the camp. Your master could have been murdered. Where is his spear? where is his water jug? And they realize it really did happen. They're missing. What happened to them? And not quite believing what has happened here. So this exchange has happened, and Saul is awake by this time, and he recognizes that voice from up on top of the mountain. He would know that voice, wouldn't he? His son-in-law, David, the man who as a boy would stroke the harp for him, and who went out and would fight for him, and killed Goliath. Saul recognized that voice, and he had heard that same voice a little while earlier at that cave, remember? And Saul says, "Is that your voice, my son David?" You see, it's kind of interesting when you see the mood swings here. You know, Saul's out to kill him, but then in a situation like this, it's almost as if Saul is speaking more kindly to him. "Is that your voice, my son David?" And David says, "It is my voice, my lord the king. Yes, it is I." And David says to Saul, why is my lord pursuing his servant? What have I done? What evil is in my hand?" So here once again, David confronts Saul. "Why are you chasing me? Have I ever done anything bad to you? Have I ever been evil? Tell me, what have I done? Please, let my lord the king listen to me. Listen to my words, the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, then let the Lord accept an offering. You know, if this is of God, you know, if God has put this in your heart, if I've done something evil and that you're needing to punish me because of something bad I've done, if this is the direction of God, then please tell me so that I can atone for it. I can have a sacrifice and be forgiven if I've done something bad." You know, this was not David's nature to do something sinful and continue in sin. He says, "If it's something I've done, tell me so I can make it right. But if men are putting this in your head to chase after me, let them be cursed before the Lord, because they have driven me today away so that I would have no attachment with the inheritance of the Lord, and even send me off to serve other gods." I have an interesting comment here that David makes. You know, if I've done something wrong, let me make a sacrifice and make it good. But if men are just making this up to keep us apart, to have a rivalry between the two of us, then they should be accursed, because I'm having to be on the run. And if I'm on the run, I'm not able to fulfill my responsibilities as a Jew. You know, what were their responsibilities every year? They go up, Passover, Day of Atonement, all these sorts of things. Do you think David was able to do all of the commands of the covenant of Moses when he's on the run from Saul? No, he's not able to go and offer his sacrifices. He's not able to go and do the things. And so David's saying, if a man has put this in your mind and brought us apart, he's keeping me from doing my service to God. Let that man be accursed. I could become unfaithful and go serve false gods. You know, somebody that would cause that, let them be accursed. And just a very interesting thing here. You know, here David wants to serve God, and people are keeping him from serving God. So many times today, we're able to serve God freely, but we don't want to serve God. But here you have a man that would want to serve God, and men were keeping him from doing it. And so David looked at this in a very interesting way, I thought, what this the situation that he was put in by Saul's jealousy and having to run, how it was actually affecting his spiritual standing with God. And if anybody calls this, they should be accursed. And so David is saying all of this to Saul. He says, "Don't let my blood fall to the ground away from the presence of the Lord. Don't let me die while I'm, you know, away from my being able to do the things I should do in service to God." This David realized this wouldn't be a good time for, you know, Saul to catch up to him and kill him, because he's been prevented by having to be on the run from doing all of the commands of the law of Moses at this time. So, you know, don't let me die in this kind of situation. And then he says something that we kind of had heard before. David says, "Why are you chasing after me anyway? I'm just like a single flea. I'm like, you know, one partridge out there in the wilderness that you're trying to catch. Of all the things that you could be doing, you're out trying to catch a single flea. You're out trying to catch a, you know, one partridge in the middle of a huge, vast wilderness. Why are you chasing after me? And David had said the same thing to him back there at that cave. He says, am I just a flea? He also said, am I a dead dog that you'd be coming after me? And here he brings that up about the flea again, but also a partridge in the wilderness. Why are you chasing after me? And so Saul realizes, you know, he's very contrite, and this is kind of the way we see Saul, that roller coaster of emotions. He's been confronted by David. David is right to confront Saul about this. And Saul realizes he's wrong. He's been, you know, misjudged David, that he's been, you know, using all of his vast resources to persecute David when, you know, he didn't need to be doing that. And Saul says, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will not harm you again, because my life was precious in your sight this day. Here, David had the opportunity to kill Saul, but he didn't do it. Saul's life was precious in David's sight. David knew that wouldn't be the right thing to do. This was God's anointed. He says, please, I've sinned. Come back to me. I will not harm you, because I see that you're not going to harm me, so I won't harm you. Behold, I have played the fool and have committed a serious error. So here for a brief period of time, Saul is in his right mind, and he realizes the folly of what he's been doing, how foolish he has been in chasing after his faithful servant, David. And says, please, come back to me. Well, David knows that wouldn't be a good idea to go back to Saul. And David says, here is your spear, king. Send one of your young men over to get it. So you know, here's your spear, here's your water bottle. Send one of your servants up here to the top of the mountain, and I'll give it to them, and you'll have it again. And the Lord will repay each man for his righteousness and his faithfulness, for the Lord delivered you into my hand today, but I refuse to stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. Behold, as your life was highly valued in my sight this day, so may my life be highly valued in the sight of the Lord, and may he deliver me from all distress. So David says, just as I was kind to you and didn't take your life was valuable in my sight, so may my life be valuable in the sight of the Lord. Maybe you reciprocate, Saul. I'm not out to get you. Leave me alone. Don't come after me. May the Lord deliver me from all distress. And Saul says to David, blessed are you, my son David. Once again, that term of endearment, affection, his son-in-law, David. And, of course, by saying my son, not just my son-in-law, but, you know, a junior to me. Saul had been like, you know, David had been in a junior position to Saul, so he'd been like a son to him. So he said, blessed are you, my son David. You will both accomplish much and surely prevail. So even Saul knew, and he had said this earlier, you're more righteous than I back at that cave, and I know someday you're going to be the king. And here he pretty much says that again. Blessed are you, you're going to accomplish much, and you will surely prevail. So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place. So we see, you know, they don't get back together, but here for a moment we have a truce again. Saul's in his right mind. He realizes that David is a good and faithful, true servant to him and is not out to get him. And so they turn and go back home. And I kind of wonder about the 3,000 men that were there with Saul. What are they thinking in their minds? Oh, here we go again. They probably understood the situation pretty well. One of the Psalms, and Bob pointed this out, Bob and Sandra pointed this out in the book, is this being a good place to fit it in, is Psalm chapter 63. This is one of the Psalms of David. It says, when he was in the wilderness of Judah, and it seems from verse 11 of this psalm that David wrote this much later in his life when he was actually the king, because he refers to himself as being the king in verse 11 of Psalm 63. But he's reflecting back on that time when he was on the run from Saul there in the wilderness of Judah. And so here we see the once again the poetic side of Saul, of David, excuse me, the poetic side of David. And you can just about imagine the young boy with the harp, and you know, that stayed with him all through his life, and that poetic, the musical side of him. Psalm 63, O God, thou art my God, I shall seek thee earnestly. My soul thirsts for thee, my flesh yearns for thee, in a dry and weary land where there is no water. Thus I have beheld thee in the sanctuary to see thy power and thy glory, because thy loving kindness is better than life. My lips will praise thee, so I will bless thee as long as I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. My soul is satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth offers praises with joyful lips. Remember what he said to Saul here just a couple minutes ago? We were talking about that, about how, cursed be the man that has driven me away from the presence of the Lord, and, you know, I'm not able to fulfill my vows, and you know, I could even turn to other gods. Well, here, you know, as David is reflecting back on this, you can kind of maybe even see a hint of this here. He said, my soul thirsts for thee, my flesh yearns for thee. I'm in a dry and weary land where there is no water. Not just a wilderness where David is, but a spiritual wilderness. He's been driven away by Saul from being able to do his faithful service. He's remained a faithful man, but he's just not able to fulfill all of the things that he should be doing. So, you know, here you see David reflecting back on that time and remembering being there on the run, and his soul thirsting for God, his flesh yearning for him, being in a dry and weary land, looking upon him in his sanctuary, even from afar. When I remember thee on my bed, I meditate on thee in the night watches, for thou hast been my help, and in the shadow of thy wings I sing for joy. My soul clings to thee, thy right hand upholds me. But those who seek my life to destroy it will go into the depths of the earth. They will be delivered over to the power of the sword. They will be a prey for foxes. But the king will rejoice in God. Everyone who swears by him will glory, for the mouths of those who speak lies will be stopped. So here David is remembering back. He's now the king, but he's remembering back to when he was being pursued, and those that were trying to destroy him, out to kill him, that they will get their just reward, that God will take care of them. It's not David's place to go in and kill the king's anointed, is it? God's going to take care of those things. And David, in retrospect, can speak of that. And he knows, even as he goes on through his life, there'll be others that will be seeking his life. But the Lord will take care of him. The Lord will take care of those enemies as well, and they'll get the punishment that's due them. A very good psalm to put in at this point in our study, as we see David on the run here in the wilderness, and even calling out to God, and how he wants to serve God even in these bad times in his life. So, chapter 27, as we start that, Saul and David had this brief, bittersweet moment of reconciliation, but David realizes it's not going to last. He's got to continue fleeing. It's not going to be to his benefit to remain with Saul. And David is beginning to have some self-pity maybe here, and you know, it just doesn't seem to be ending. David says, oh, I know one day I'm going to die at the hand of Saul. If I, you know, this just keeps on, one day, one of these days he's going to catch up with me, and it's going to be all over. I've stayed a step ahead of him all this time, but I'm worried that my day is coming. So he decides the best thing for him to do is to go over and live among the Philistines. And it's kind of like one of those things, if my enemy and, well, anyway, we must be friends if we're the enemies of the same person. And so he goes over and lives among the Philistines. And he goes back to Achish and is living there in Gath. And remember, he had lived with Achish one other time, and he had heard the Philistines talking about him. Oh, this is David. This is the one that had killed all of us. Remember, they sang about him. Saul killed his thousands. David's killed his tens of thousands of Philistines. And he had to act like he was insane. He was drooling in his beard and scribbling on the doorways. And Saul or David had to get away from Achish before, but now he goes back to Achish again. Goes back to the city of Gath because he feels like that's probably going to be the safest place to get away from Saul. And so David goes back to Achish, and he seems to be in his right mind this time. Remember, Achish had said, "Don't I have enough crazy people around me? Why do I have him too?" But David comes back, and just out of protection, out of despair of Saul seeking after him, and says, as we go down to verse 4, that when Saul found out that David was living among the Philistines, he didn't chase after him anymore. And so this will be the last time that we're not going to hear about Saul chasing after David anymore from this point on. And the reason why is that we're getting toward the end of Saul's reign. And death is coming soon for Saul, and we'll see how God has that planned. David, and he has 600 men with him at this point, verse 2 of chapter 27. And so they are there in Gath, and it says that David lived there, he and his men, each with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam and Abigail. So they were all living there in Gath. Well, you can kind of imagine, a man comes with 600 soldiers with him, and they have their household with them as well. That's going to be, 600 times at least two or three. Ooh, that's going to be quite a jump in the population there in Gath. And we all know that, one of the most wonderful sights is the sight of the taillights of our house guests leaving us. And just imagine if, you have house guests, 600 men with all their household, coming into your house, into your city to live with you. Woo! That's going to change things. You're going to wear out your welcome fairly quickly. Saul, David says to Achish, he says, "If I found favor in your sight," verse 5, "give me a place in one of your cities where my men and I, where we can go and live with our household, and we won't be here interfering with you all." Well, we don't want to wear out our welcome with you. "Give me a city where we can go and live. Why should we stay here in the royal city with you?" And so Achish gave him the city of Ziklag that day. And it says that from that day forward, the city of Ziklag belonged to the nation of Israel. It was no longer a Philistine city. So Achish, the Philistine king of Gath, gave David the city of Ziklag for David and his men, their household, to live there. And it says that David lived there in the land of the Philistines for a year and 4 months. So that tells us about how much time is left in Saul's reign. There's about a year and 4 months. Of course, David's actually going to have to kind of stay away for a little. But anyway, about a year and 4 months is what it says they're going to be living there. And it says David and his men would go up and raid the Geshurites and the Gerzites and the Amalekites. They were the inhabitants of the land from ancient times. So this was down in the southern part of the land of Israel, over where this would be the southwestern part of the country. The Philistines lived along the coast there in the southern part. And so David and his men are living in Ziklag, but they're going out and marauding the area around them. going out against the Geshurites and the Gerzites and the Amalekites, the people that lived there for a long time. And it said he would attack the land and would not leave a man or a woman alive. He'd take away their sheep, their cattle, the donkeys, the camels, their clothing. And so he'd just go out and just utterly annihilate these enemies that were settled in that area. And so this was going to be actually a good thing for David to do, because later when he would become king, that area, that southern part that had been where, you know, their enemies had lived before, it would be secure for him now. So he was out there actually doing some things in preparation for eventually becoming king. And he'd go back and see Achish, the Philistine king there in Gath, and Achish would say, "What have you been doing today?" And he'd say, "Well," he said, "where have you made a raid today?" And David would say, "Well, I went down into the Negev, that southern part of Judah, against the Negev of the Jeremites and the Negev of the Kenites. And I fought and did all of these things here." And so, yes, that was where the Jeremites and the Kenites lived. But the Jeremites and the Kenites were friends of the Israelites. The Kenites were the descendants of Moses' wife, his father-in-law, Moses' father-in-law, the Kenites. So these were friendly people. Was David going down and destroying these friendly people? No. He was going in the area where they lived, though, and killing the Amalekites and the Geshurites and the Gerzites that lived there in that area. But he was sparing the friendly people to the Israelites. Well, when he would tell Achish where he was down there raiding, Achish thought that he was down there destroying his own people, David's own people. Well, that wasn't the case. David was going down there destroying their enemies and was not harming the friendly people, the good people down there. But he wouldn't leave anybody alive so they could go back and tell otherwise. And so Achish thought that, he said, "Wow, David is really giving himself a bad name among his own people. Because of that, he'll be loyal to me forever, because he can't go back to his own people if he's killing them." But that's not what David was doing. He was sparing the good people down there. He was just taking out the bad people. But Achish thought he was taking out the bad people, the way that David would describe his raids. And so he's made himself odious among his own people, Israel. Therefore, he'll become my servant forever. And so I think we're going to have to stop there. I did want to go into 1 Chronicles and tell you about some interesting things that happened to David while he was living at Ziklag. But I think Bob will pick up on that on Wednesday night. Thanks a lot, everybody.